everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and welcome to What Women Must Know, a show empowering you with truthful information so you can make the most informed decisions possible regarding your health and well-being. So thank you for joining me, and thank you for your commitment to being the very best you that you can be. For those who are listening for the first time, I want to welcome you. I always like to invite people to go to my website, which is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and I'm going to spell that, S-H-E-R-R-I-L-L, Selman, S-E-L-L-M-A-N. Thank you, Mom, for giving me that unusual name. It's just not easy when you're trying to give it over the air. So it's CherylSelman.com, and you can go to my Facebook page, which is What Women Must Know. Like me there, because through both of those avenues, I will post all of the shows. I have this show every Thursday. And then I also have the Love Code every Saturday at 11 a.m., which is all about spiritual inspiration, healing, transformation. So both of these shows are incredibly valuable for your life, and I hope you'll listen to both of my shows. But if you go to my website and opt in, or like me over at Facebook page, you can listen to them at your convenience. And certainly if you opt into my website, it comes right to your inbox. So it's very convenient. Okay, so I want to talk about the conversation I'm having today. It's with Jason Bodden-Smith, all the way from Sydney, Australia. And we have lots to talk about, so we're going to start off by exploring how sunlight plays a huge role in our health, why exposure to sunlight plays a huge role in our health. And then we're going to bounce over to one of my favorite subjects, which is the impact, the health risks associated with exposure to EMFs, electromagnetic frequencies, Wi-Fi devices, microwave radiation, smart meters, all the things that are going on in our 21st century world. And I just want to tell you a little bit about Jason. He is a successful entrepreneur, author, and speaker. He has founded four companies during his business career, including one of the largest and most successful environmental consultancy companies in Australia. But financial success came at a great cost. Jason developed 20 chronic diseases and cured himself by going to the beach and eating oysters. Okay, it was a little more complex than that, and he's going to tell us exactly what went on. But his moonshot goal is to reduce illness in 100 million people by 2030. But first, he had to figure out how to heal his own body. And he did. And he is the author of a great book called In the Dark, which I highly recommend people read. So we're going to have a fantastic conversation, and it's my great pleasure to welcome Jason to the show today. So hello, Jason.
Hi, Cheryl. Thank you so much for inviting me on your show. It's a great privilege and honor to be here. And, yeah, you sound like you're doing amazing work for some amazing people. So happy to share and join in the conversation.
Well, you're pretty amazing in your own right, Jason, and I have to say that I came across you because recently I had Dr. Jack Cruz on my show, and somehow your name came up in the conversation with Jack or information that Jack sent me. And I'm always one to, you know, I'm like a hound dog, right? You know, I find the scent of something and I just stay with it. And it led me to you, and I found you and contacted you. So you're very gracious to give us this time today. And you do have not only a very inspiring story, but you have a very inspiring mission. So let's start with your story. And tell us what happened to you and which led to these 20 different health conditions that actually, you know, were taking you down, so to speak, if you didn't do something seriously about it.
Sure. What sparked the conditions was knee damage. I tell people I was actually playing tennis, but the truth is I was playing table tennis. It doesn't make a sporty guy like I used to be sound very sporty. But after playing table tennis, my knee just went. And after having MRI scans on both knees, I had grade 4 cartilage damage in both knees. Now, I couldn't walk. I literally was walking like a crab down stairs in complete pain, and I knew I was in trouble. So I then went to the medical doctors and had full assessments done, and before you know it, I am diagnosed with so many diseases. You know, everything from the mild versions of blood pressure and diabetes 2, which is not that mild, through to cancer. I had three different types of skin cancer, and I had a heart attack. I had, you know, if you start from the toes and work to my head, you know, in my toes I had gout in my right toe that came so frequently I was in permanent pain. I had plantar fasciitis, I had heel spurs. You could walk up to my knees and then you get to my lower back. I had L4, L5, perforated and herniated discs. I had sacrum issues. If you go, keep going, I just had so many. But the funny part was when I went to a sacral massage therapist, medical doctor as well, and she was doing the sacral work on my head. She said to me, "How many head injuries have you had in your life?" And I said, "No, quite a few." And I started rattling them all off. And she said, "Oh my goodness, you know, no wonder you've got such problems with your head." And she jokingly said, "I think I'm going to jackhammer to fix you." And I went, "Right, I am from head to toe in big trouble." So I tried all the medical processes that everyone else would use. We go to the specialist, we get bounced around from this doctor to that doctor, this test, that test. And some of the things helped, but nothing really worked. I then tried all the, you know, the alternative functional, you know, holistic style medicine, and they focused more on supplementation, nutrition, exercise, and some of the more, you know, spiritual type practices of meditation and dealing with your personal stuff. And again, that helped a little bit, but didn't solve the problem. And it wasn't until I was literally at my wit's end. I was so frustrated thinking, you know, and I'm a problem solver. I love to solve problems, and I'll tell a little bit about my background in a minute so people know who I am and where I come from. But it was actually sitting in meditation on a beach in Sydney, and with sunrise as well, the irony is not lost, and I got this download, you know, whether it's divine inspiration or just, you know, my brain helping me along, and I said, "Study physics and biology." And I went, "What? Physics and biology? Like, we've all heard of biochemistry, but biophysics and health? They're not really used much in medicine or in alternative health." And so I got onto the search engines and started studying biophysics. I found your previous guest, Dr. Jack Cruz, and I just resonated with his message. Now, I found it very difficult to understand him. I found it very difficult to follow, but I persisted. And I implemented his protocols, which we'll go through in a minute, to heal and reverse all those diseases. Now, they're not his protocols. He's just adopted them from nature and, you know, other people that he studied and put together, mainly from Russia and other Eastern scientific people who never lost their sight on energy. But before we get to the solutions, I'll just give you a little bit of background on me, because I think the audience will appreciate that I didn't believe this could work. I've got two science degrees. I've got a Bachelor of Applied Science in Environmental Health and a Master's of Environmental Science in Toxicology. And I've spent my life studying, researching, and consulting on the impact of the environment on human health. My whole life. It started with beach pollution as a 16-year-old at Maroubra Beach, which is a story we won't go into today because I know we've only got an hour or so. But they can read it in my first book, Making Waves, if they want to know more about me and my business philosophy and how I went from a working class kid to being, you know, a self-made multimillionaire and, you know, being able to fix the planet and make a lot of money at the same time with our environmental company. The other part I want people to understand is, you know, my researchers in my young 20s, I worked in the health department for a few years and then University of New South Wales, that was all published in the Medical Journal of Australia. So I am published in peer-reviewed journals, I've got the academic credentials, I've got the experience, and I didn't know about this information. If I didn't know about this information, how does anyone know about it? Like, I studied it my whole life, it just didn't make sense to me. So I tell everyone, and including your audience today, I want to turn their BS meter on full. I don't want you to believe a word I say. Now, I'm not a medical doctor, I'm an environmental guy and a business guy. But environmental health, the impact of the environment on human health. So I don't treat, I don't diagnose, You know, if you spoke to my wife, especially a couple of years ago, she would laugh. Going to Jason for health advice? You're nuts. He does everything possible to destroy himself. And I did. But the things I did that I thought were the biggest problems were not. So eating poorly and not exercising enough and what else do? You have some toxic relationships and you put up with a lot of negativity in your life because you're stuck in the mousetrap, so to speak. That wasn't the problem. That all contributes. But the big problem was I disconnected from nature. Not intentionally. It was a natural process where when you lead a corporate life, you're up at the crack of dawn, you're in an office under artificial blue light, surrounded by technology, you've got air conditioning systems, you've got no natural light, and I worked in that environment for many hours, up to 16 to 18 hours a day in the early days, 6 days a week, and that's what made me sick. Now, if you say that to somebody today, they think you're nuts. But truly, that's what made me sick. And we can go through the reasons why, because the way we prove it, and I like to prove it, is by getting better. There's nothing better than showing people you can reverse some serious illness and do it just by reconnecting back to nature and minimizing your indoor life, or at least making sure your indoor life is not toxic like it was for me for 25, 30 years. So that's a quick background. I know it took 5-10 minutes, but that's the short version. There's much more I could share, but I'll let you lead the conversation, Cheryl.
So you've turned everything around. So you had a, you know, when we were talking beforehand, I gather, there was all, when you were diagnosed, when you went to the doctor and finally, you know, wanted to find out what was going on with all with your knees and then found all these other things that you had going on, I mean, it was a crisis in your life. And you went through a deep crisis because you shed everything of your life that existed before, as you were saying, right? You shed your businesses, your relationships. You had to let it all go because you were at, you know, it's like a death and rebirth time, as, you know, I like to say. Deep crises in our life is always an ending of one thing and the beginning of something else. And you were beginning a journey to regain your health. That's what initiated you. It's led to something more, obviously, but that was the starting point.
I'm happy to share something. I usually don't talk about this, but it was like the preparation work you need to do to heal. So because I did so many things incorrectly for so many years, I just went, I didn't know what the problem was. No, I couldn't get better with medicine. I couldn't get better with supplements, with diet, with exercise. So I said, right, I'm going to start again. And the only way I know how to start again is to have a clean slate. So while it upset a lot of people, I literally got divorced. I divorced my friends, most of them. I divorced a lot of my family. I moved to an apartment, was actually a house in Whale Beach, which for Sydney people know that's kind of up the peninsula near Palm Beach, and became a recluse. And I just kept asking myself, why have I manifested these illnesses? Why are they here? And during that process, I decided to write a book because a lot of people ask me, well, how did you go from being a working class boy out of Maroubra to become, you know, a very successful businessman? And I got sick of answering it, so I thought, I'd write a book about it. And when you write a book, especially a semi-autobiography book, it brings up all your life lessons and experiences that you've had for the first, say, 40, 45 years of my life. And if you haven't dealt with them, you can't proceed. So I found myself doing some deep inner work. And that inner work now I know was critical to allow me to get to a point where I could deal with the physical. Because you do need to deal with your mental issues, your emotional issues, your spiritual issues, because we've all had trauma. A lot of us don't even remember the trauma we've had because it was so horrific we've blocked it out of our mind and our psyche. So you need to go back and relive those. You need to resolve them. And then I kind of incorporate those experiences into my heart, soul essence, like into me, and saying they were very worthy. They were horrific, they were torturous, they were just like, I don't want to do it ever again, but they were really important for me to learn a particular lesson. So I know it's really hard, but you need to actually learn the level of self-love that you need to get proper healing is pretty deep. And I went through that process, which was horrendous, but very cathartic. You know, writing that book was probably the most cathartic thing I've ever done in my life, and it took a long, long time. And I'm sure that played a big role in dealing with, you know, some of the reasons why I was so, I'll give you an example, so overweight, is that, you know, my father was a champion sportsman. He, you know, he played for Australia in field hockey. He did get selected for the Olympic team, but got kicked out for being violent. And he was, you know, champion sportsman. He won squash player to 40. And his son was very talented in some sports, but because he put so much pressure on me and I was never good enough and all this other stuff, that I put a barrier around me, which was weight. And that was one of the reasons I was so big. Now, that's not the only reason, but it was one of the key reasons. So you've got to deal with that emotional trauma as well if you want to really self-heal. And that allowed me to get into what I call the physical world. Now, I started my journey at the spiritual level, went down to the emotional, the mental, and I kind of forgot about the physical. And that's why I got so ill, because I had to deal with these physical issues. And that's what I did. And I learned that through studying Jack Cruz's material and listening to his podcasts and his webinars, joining his community and understanding the power of nature and how we are built. We are biologically designed to be in nature. And people forget that we're photoelectric beings. We're not just a bag of chemicals. Now, those bag of chemicals, all the biochemistry and our nuclear DNA are critical. They're very, very important, and you should never lose sight of them. But they're only half the story. The other half of the story is the energy side. And when you know, do your meditation and spiritual and emotional work, you understand that energy is a very powerful thing. There's nothing more powerful than love. That's the number one powerful energy on the planet. And when you start looking at that, you go, okay, how do we create energy in a physical level? And that's where Jack is brilliant. This guy goes very deep into quantum mechanics. Quantum mechanics is the study of the tiny. I mean, it's smaller than you could ever imagine. And he has been able to take that knowledge, because he is really a genius. Jack is six steps ahead of any medicine doctor I've ever come across. There may be better ones that I don't know about them, but he is so far ahead. And because he studies nature, like Michelangelo does. Like, everyone thinks Michelangelo is a great artist and he was a terrific artist, but they forget that he drew a heart valve. He designed the first plane by studying birds. Like, this guy was a genius, and Jack kind of reminds me of him a little bit, because he studies nature and then goes back to the human body, and because he's a neuroscientist, like top of the pops when it comes to medicine, he can relate that quantum mechanics to the physical body in a way that many can't, and I think his work is exceptional, and yeah, I give a lot of credit to him for fixing my physical illnesses. Now, despite the headache that understanding quantum mechanics and medicine can do for people, if you follow the simple steps, that's all you need to do. You just need to understand, okay, what do I need to do? You know, it's good to know the how and the why, and it's fun, and if you've got a curious mind, you should do it. But really, busy people, what do I need to do? And that's what we can go through if you want.
So let's talk about those simple steps, but profound steps and steps that people don't really understand nor appreciate how important they are for regaining our health, maintaining our health. We have become a disconnected culture, because I think in your book I read that it was 93% of our time is spent indoors, which is never the way humans evolve. So let's start there. Let's start about the consequences of staying indoors and not getting out into nature, not getting out into sunlight.
Well, that's it. That is the number one problem. There's nothing more important that we have done. You know, Jack calls us zoo animals, and that's a little bit harsh, but he's kind of true. Like, we are the smartest being that's ever evolved on this planet, and we've become so smart that we think we do not need nature. There has been this war between man and nature since we started building dams. And we're now taking our kind of materialism, our addiction to the materialistic world, to a level that we think we can live forever by essentially making us inhuman, turning us into human robots. And that's what transhumanism is all about. And there is dead set an agenda for us to become you know, more robot-like and less human. Now, I don't know about you. I do know what you think, Cheryl, and many of the listeners. You know, I don't want to lose my humanity. There's something about having emotions. There is something brilliant about creating, having imagination, and all these things where we can tap into, I just call it the field, the morphogenic field that is around us, and anyone can label it any way they want. There is a magic about that. There is something divine about that, and I want to tap into that. I don't want to lose that. So I'm going the opposite way. I'm going to become the best human I can become. That's my personal goal. Self-empowerment is my personal goal, and I want to be what the Hopi Indians call and the Australian Aboriginals call like beings. They're the most evolved humans that can be, is actually incorporating light. And this brings us back to nature. The number one thing that we've lost sight of is that we are wirelessly connected to the sun and hardwired to the earth. That's how we're designed. I don't care what anyone tells you. Just go back to your, you know, basic science books in primary school. We are coupled with nature. It's impossible for trees and plants to live without humans or animals. That's the part that people forget. How does this work? It works very simply. Photosynthesis. That is the basis of the whole food web. The basis of all energy we get through food comes through photosynthesis. That takes natural sunlight into a chloroplast in a plant. It creates this process called photosynthesis, where it takes the carbon dioxide and water and turns it into sugars, like turns it into the leaves and the plants, which now feed the whole food web. Then we look at, so that's happening through chloroplasts. So what's the chloroplast in an animal or a human? It's called mitochondria, the second DNA that we're never told about, that you only get from your mother. I know you've covered this, so we won't go into full detail, but it's really important that you need to understand where your mitochondria comes from when it comes to health, and we can talk about that a little bit later. So what do mitochondria produce? They produce water and carbon dioxide. The same things that plants need to survive. We are coupled. We are joined at the hip. There is no getting around that. So if you think you can walk away from nature and move indoors and live in air conditioning, you know, with all the windows sealed under false alien light and be healthy, you're nuts. It's impossible. It cannot be done. And we are proving that with the illnesses we're getting now. So getting back to light, the most important light that you'll ever see ever in your life is the sunrise. That is the frequencies and the information. It's not just about getting your red and infrared light. It's also about getting your information, literally information to your body. That's through your eyes and your skin primarily, and we won't go through all the biochemistry and biophysics processes because that's Jack's role. I'm not the doctor. But I'm happy to talk about it a little bit if you want. But that light, the best way to understand it is, how does a tomato know when to ripen? The sun tells it. That's how it knows. The sun has the same power and influence over us. It tells us how our hormones activate in the morning. You know, it tells us everything to do with the photoreceptors inside our body. And what people don't appreciate is that we have a lot of photoreceptors. These are kind of dishes that take signals from the sun purposely in our body. We're full of them, all the opsins. We even have UV receptors in our eyes. Why is everyone telling us that, you know, the sun is so bad for us? This is war on sun. It's incredible when we actually have the UV receptors in our eyes. So why would you wear sunglasses? We know the UV light is dangerous by itself, and that's where the meme came from, that sunlight is bad. If you trace it back through John Ott's work, you can find the references where they did studies on, I think it was baby mice, looking at jaundice treatments using artificial light, and those mice developed retinal eye damage, cancer, and that's when the original paper brought about that UV causes cancer, UV is bad, oh, the sun has UV, therefore the sun is bad. Well, sorry, the sun doesn't just have UV. It has red, it has infrared, it has all the colours of the rainbow. So that Pink Floyd album where the light comes in the prism and you get all the colours of the rainbow. And it has a whole bunch of frequencies and information that we just don't have the technology to measure. That all talks to our biology. because that's how we evolved. So to ignore that morning sunlight is the number one mistake we've ever made. And you'll hear Jack say this every interview, that you must see the morning AM sun. And he's correct. I put that down to that activity of getting up every morning, going down to the beach, being fully grounded, because you want to get the electrons from the earth. You're hardwired to the earth. You need to get your bare feet on the ground. It doesn't have to be the beach. It can be the park. It can be a rock. It doesn't have to be sand. What I like about the beach is when I live close by it, so it's easy for me, but I also get water. I also get the three magical parts of being in nature, which is the salt water, the sand, and the sun. So that's the first thing I did. If we want to go into light management, which I think the audience should understand, is we call it EMF hygiene. And EMF is not just electromagnetic fields that you equate with wireless, which we'll talk about in a minute. It's the electromagnetic fields that occur naturally, like the sun, like the earth. We need these fields. So the EMF hygiene is maximizing your nature time. Now, Cruise has estimated that for every 15 minutes you spend in nature, that's without sunglasses, with feet on the ground, no shoes, with as much with your swimmers on is best, so you get some skin in the game. That equates to 45 minutes of artificial exposure. So nature's three times as strong as the artificial environment. So you don't have to spend all day in nature, is what we're saying. It's just saying you've got to spend as much time as you can. When you're in these artificial environments, you need to understand that you are going into a hazardous zone. Now, people can't believe that being under a light, like a fluorescent light or a halogen light, is actually hazardous to your health, because we're never told it. I'm telling you, it is, because it's unbalanced. We just told you that the natural light has 42% infrared, so it's mainly infrared. It has some UV as well. It has the colours of the rainbow and all these other frequencies. It's perfectly balanced and designed by nature. We go into these artificial environments and we just take those aspects of nature that we like to use the best, which is really bright lights, because that keeps us alert, but it stuffs up all our biochemistry and all our hormonal balance, which you can talk about better than me. It also puts us in an artificial environment when it comes to the air we're breathing, when it comes to the light that's coming through the windows. Remember, a lot of light coming through a window is blocked. Nearly all your UVA is blocked, so you haven't got great sunlight coming through glass. You need to have open windows. Unfortunately, in big office blocks, there's no windows that open because of the air conditioning system. So we've got these foreign environments where we spend all day staring at a screen, another artificial light that's perfectly pitched at 455 nanometers, which is how we measure light frequencies, which is heavy blue. It's like, killer blue. So we need to do things. So what? I don't work in a corporate environment anymore. That was one of the things I let go, and I'm never going back to. I'm building this new global company literally out of the spare room in my house, because technology, which I love, allows us to. I'm not a Luddite. I sold my first company, which is a technology company, to several million. So I love technology. I'm not giving up my iPhone for anyone. I'm just going to learn how to manage it better. So don't think I'm coming at this from, we've got to go back in a cave and start eating raw meat. No. No, I'm a modern guy doing modern things. I love my life, and I'm not going to cut back on the efficiencies and productivity I get through technology. I'm just going to understand what the problems are with it and manage it. We're not going to get rid of it. It's not going away. In fact, it's coming harder, faster than you can ever imagine with the rollout of 5G and the Internet of Things. But just to finish the light management, so what I'd wear, I'd actually wear a cap inside the office. I would then put on my blue blocking glasses. The blue blocking glasses that I prefer for daytime is ones where I don't lose vision and or colour. That's me. I imagine designers and other people would be very similar. So we're lucky that an American technology has worked out a way to minimise as much blue light as possible without losing vision and colour. Now, they're not perfect, but they're perfect for my application during the day. At night, I definitely put on the red ones. I want to block everything up to 550 nanometers. So if I'm watching TV or on the computer, I'm definitely wearing that. If someone turns the lights on, I'm wearing them. Plus, I cover my whole body with clothes because we've got melanopsin in our skin, so we don't want to damage that either. So that's light management very quickly. There's more we can talk about, but I'm wary of time, and I'd like you to lead the conversation.
Yes, because it's a big topic. So, okay, so so the really important message here is understanding the role of light. And some light is life-giving, and some light, which we're talking about, is artificial light that we now have everywhere, is harmful when we have constant exposure. So there are certain things that I really want us to explore and myths that we need to address. So there's one big myth, and Australia is probably the greatest example of operating with this myth, which is the terror of the sun. So for people who don't know, the one of the national mottos in Australia is slip, slop, slap. That's, I think, been around for, 30 years or so?
It's the first campaign.
So every Australian is terrified of the sun, and everyone uses sunscreen. And then you go to the beach and you see these kids, not all of them, but you see some that wear swimming suits that are like from their ankles all the way up to their necks and to their wrists, because everyone is terrified of skin cancer. So let's talk about that, because this is a huge myth, Jason. People need to really understand and have the understanding of why this is a myth and what really is going on that's generating the skin cancers and this increase. I've come across people who have melanomas in their eyes now, which never existed before. So can you help us understand what's going on here?
Sure. You know, I think we need to go back in history to start this off, because sunlight was once a source of divine power. So how did we go from divine power to class one carcinogen? People don't understand that sunlight is now classified as a class one cancer-causing chemical. Insane. So in the old days, you know, whether you go back to ancient Greece or you go to Arabia and ancient Egypt, they all use sunlight as a therapy. The therapy was called helotherapy. It was kind of the medical use of sunlight for healing. The book by, I think it was John Harvey Kellogg, called Light Therapeutics, is the good history book that I read a long time ago. If you go through to, you know, more modern 1900s, there were people like, I think it was Augusta Rollier, who I think had like 30 or 40 sun clinics during the 1920s and 30s, treating a whole range of different illnesses. So it was used as a number one medical tool. What happened after World War II is that we got the onset of chemicals, whether it was Big Pharma producing all their drugs or whether it was like all the pesticides that came out of post-World War II. So it seems to me, and, you know, I don't want to be controversial here, but somehow the sun got buried after that period of time. They didn't want people to appreciate that nature was really the source of health. And these artificial chemicals did help and, you know, done some wonderful things. Like, you're not going to say that you don't like antibiotics. When I have a throat infection and it's bacterial, I'm definitely going to take antibiotics to get rid of it. They'd be wonderful in many cases. But we shouldn't let go of the energy side of things, and the energy side comes from light and the sunlight. So there was a campaign to demonize the sun, and the weapon of choice was propaganda. And Australia is one of the few countries that get used for all the trialing of all the new ways to kind of control humanity. And in 1981, there was a seagull called Sid that sang a song that became a tune that many kids memorized. And it was slip, slop, slap, slip on some sunscreen, slop on a hat, I forget exactly what they were, but it was like, wear sunscreen, wear a hat and cover up and don't go in the sun unless you really have to. And they did that based on this paper I mentioned earlier. I think it was in the 1950s or early 60s, because blindness in children were caused by UV lamps. It wasn't sunlight. It was an artificial light that caused the whole story. And you can read that in Dr. John Ott's book. I think it's called Health and Light. So we can go through why ultraviolet light just by itself is so critical. You know, from vitamin D, that's the number one benefit. We can only get vitamin D from UV. There's no other way to get it. Taking a pill doesn't really work. I'll let the medical guys talk to that more than me, but we need UV. Now, the key to sunlight is don't get burnt. You don't want to get burnt, not because it gives you cancer. My skin cancer wasn't caused by the sun. It was the lack of sun that caused it. You don't want to get burnt because it hurts, and you can't sleep properly. And nobody want to do something that hurts you. So you just want to get to pink. Now, one of the other great things about the AM sunlight that we never talked about was it gives you what they call a skin callus. So it gives you, and I'm not talking about a callus like you get on your hand. It's like this topological insulator you get on your skin that is preparing you as a natural sunscreen to withstand the midday sun. Now, if you speak to the local Aboriginals of Australia, and they are jet black, these guys have got so much melanin in their skin, they're very, very dark, they will not sit in midday in the sun. They'll sit under a tree. They know that too much of a good thing is something you don't need. So they manage their sunlight exposure, even though they don't technically get sunburn. We do. Well, I do, because I'm from Scotland and the UK. So I've got to be very careful. But I start off with morning sunlight, and I find that I can... And Australian sun is strong. It's the strongest sun probably in the world. And I can handle midday sun for a while. But when it's too hot, I just seek shelter. I never wear sunglasses, because that is just crazy. Why do you want to put a piece of glass between you and the source of life? It doesn't make any sense to me. But I will wear sunglasses on two occasions. One, when I'm fishing, especially in the early morning, and the sun is just bouncing off the water, like with tremendous glare. Plus, I want to get that kingfish up before the sharks get it, so I want to wear the polarized sunglasses so I can see kind of through the water easily. And the other time I'd wear sunglasses is if you were skiing, because you get snow blind. So you get, again, the reflection off the snow. So you definitely want to wear some protection there. But even when you're skiing, when you're going up the chairlift and you're not staring at the snow, you can just put them on your head and get some sun into your eyes. For those, oh, it's too glary, oh, I can't do it, oh, it's too hard. I was one of them. I wore sunglasses more than I wore underpants, seriously. I used to wear them all the time. You grab your keys, you grab your wallet, and you grab your sunglasses. You would not leave the house without sunglasses. I was addicted to them. I went cold turkey. And it was hard for the first 2 or 3 weeks. What I did to help mitigate was wear a hat. The hat will block most of the sun. You don't need to wear sunglasses, and now I can wear sunglasses. I don't wear sunglasses in environments where everyone's reaching for them because their eyes have been conditioned, been weakened, and they have to have protection when they don't really need it. So, is there some more we want to talk about, or is that enough?
Yeah. No, there's some more because we need to. Well, I want you to explain why getting the sunlight into your eyes, especially during sunrise. And I have to say, since I learned this, which was, I don't know, maybe 6 months ago, I have been watching the sunrise as much as I can. Even when it's this week, it was like, 10 degrees Fahrenheit outside my balcony, which faces east. I was out there, watching the sunrise, only for maybe 5 minutes, but I was out there. But, I've stopped using sunglasses as well, and I stopped using suntan lotions as well since I've been learning all this. It's so profound. I just want to say our culture teaches us everything that we think is beneficial, but it's really upside down. Most of what we're taught is inaccurate, is flawed, is misinformation, and it's harmful. And yet we've been conditioned to it because we've heard it so many times. It's a brainwashing. And this is so revolutionary, and I love it because, to me, it resonates with truth, that we have disconnected ourselves from nature. We have disconnected ourselves from the source of life and healing, and we need to get back to it because without it, we're causing serious harm to ourselves. So there is a certain healing that happens when you watch the sunrise in the morning through your eyes, undisturbed, not with sunglasses, not with regular glasses. If you have contacts, you probably want to take them out as well. What happens when you watch the sun in the morning? What goes on? And I know you probably know the simple physiology of what is occurring and the effect on our circadian rhythms and all those key functions. Can you kind of help us understand that, Jason?
Sure. So circadian biology and circadian rhythms is what you alluded to, and there were Nobel Prizes, I think it was in 2017, for this science. So it's not something that was just made up. This is hard science. You know, the simplest way to think about it is we have photoreceptors. So we have these kind of little antenna dishes in our eyes, all these little receptors that need these natural frequencies. Like if you look at the mitochondria, on the fourth stage, the cytochrome C, there are four receptors that range between 650 and 820 nanometers. They are the frequencies of infrared and red sunlight. We only get them through morning sun. You can get them in the afternoon sun. You can actually get some of them during the whole day. But the key ones, because you want to set all your hormones, you want to set all your metabolism, all the pathways that run your biochemistry are set through these signals. So you get them through your eyes and you also get them through your skin. What we learned last year, or 2017, with melanopsin, which is one of these key receptors, is not only in our eyes, as we knew about, but it's in all the subcutaneous fat of our skin. So when we're doing the morning sunrise, you should be using your swimmers. Some of us wear these swimmers, they're called kinkies, and they're made of material that allow UV and other sun rays to come through the clothing, so they're not even blocked in those areas. The reason we need to do it, because if you start adding the artificial frequencies without setting all your hormones and metabolism right to begin with, you're going to run into all these issues, whether it's your leptin sensitivity, you know, whether it's, you know, all the cortisol production. You won't make melatonin because everyone thinks melatonin is made at night. It's not. It's generated in the morning. That's when the body's told, the body starts making it in the morning sunlight, and then it needs 4 hours of darkness at night to be activated. So we think, you know, we think melatonin is a sleep hormone, and it is, but it's actually made during the day. There's a whole host of those photoreceptors that are critical to just health and biological function that are made with these natural frequencies, and if you avoid them, then you are going to get sick and you're going to die early. It's as simple as that.
And that's why it's so profound. You know, one of the leading topics these days in alternative functional medicine is the role of circadian rhythms and how necessary it is to establish healthy circadian rhythms, because every single organ, if not every single cell, is wired to a certain circadian rhythm, and it's all set in motion when you watch that sunrise in the morning. As you said, it's not just light, it's frequencies, it's information, is setting in place frequencies that are affecting and creating and setting up these circadian cycles that affect every single organ in your body and how it functions, which is so important. And if we don't get the light, and if we go right from getting up to looking onto our smartphone and then getting on the computer, which is all this blue light, which is midday light, which is totally screwing up our circadian rhythms, it's going to be this mismatch, and we will have dysfunction occurring in our body on some level at some point in time. Inevitable.
And if you go into the artificial light, like the screens that most people look at are four times the color intensity of the blue light you find in the sun. So you're going to extreme levels without getting the protection to begin with. So you need to balance out all blue light with red light. And some people say, well, I don't get any sunlight. You know, I live in the northern parts of Canada or the UK. Then I would get some artificial red light. I would definitely put that in my room when I'm doing my computer work. And, you know, they are just frequencies that, you know, have red and infrared light. And they're my second choice. I would never use them if I didn't have sunlight, but some people have no choice. So there are things we can do to overcome that, make sure you wear the blue blockers. And, yeah, resiliency is what we talked about before we came on air. And the way we're going to survive the onslaught we have, and people don't realize what's coming. They really have no clue because it's invisible, and we've been told it's safe. It's not. like all the electromagnetic fields that you do such a good job talking about, Cheryl, like, you know, that's what my second book is all about. We are going from an average of 6 devices that have wireless communication in them today, in the average home, to 30 in the next 5 years. We're going to have these two-way communication antennas all wirelessly connected to a smart meter, which most people unfortunately already have on their home, put in there when we weren't, you know, we're at work and weren't watching. They're going to be in your toaster. They're going to be in your kettle. They're going to be in your washing machine. They're going to be in your fridge. They're going to be in every appliance that's going to feed this information into a smart meter. That smart meter then feeds to a smart grid, and that smart grid is used to run a smart city. We're going to have a rollout of all these antennas. They're small cell antennas now. They're getting so miniature that the World Mobile Congress, which has the latest technology, are putting them on strips of plastic, and they're going to tape them to things. You're not going to be able to see they exist. People next door are going to have self-installed 5G antennas they can put up to get, you know, better signals, which they don't need, by the way. You know, do you really need to download the whole series of Game of Thrones in 5 minutes? You can't watch it that quickly. The signals that are coming now are all for machines. They're not for humans. But they're coming, and we invited them. In fact, we lined up for them. If you go to an Apple store when they release a new iPhone, their queues go forever around the block. We love this stuff. We're invited in, so now we have to learn to
do it. I want to jump in, Jason. We don't just love it. We're addicted to it. It's something even more sinister, because the exposure to, as you know, well, we didn't have time to get into it, but exposure to that blue light can alter the, reduce the dopamine levels. Or was it increase the dopamine? What does the blue light do? Can you just clarify that? I'm not sure now. But it affects our dopamine levels, which is
we get natural dopamine.
Creates pleasure. We seek pleasure. Go
ahead. Correct. Yeah, so there's patterns they've developed that are purposely designed for it to be addictive. So, like, when you get a like or a post regarding a Facebook post you put up, that stimulates a hit. It's like a... like getting a reward, like getting a kind of treat. So we're getting our dopamine hits now off technology instead of getting it from the sun. And because we are biologically designed to seek out dopamine naturally, then when we get it artificially, our body thinks, oh, okay, this is the way we need to get our dopamine, and we keep coming back. That's why we can't put our iPhone down. We can't put our smartphone down, because it's like a part of our appendage now. We really can't put it down, but we have to. You want to have it on airplane mode nearly all the time if you can.
And the real risk is to our children, who are being given these devices to entertain with and be entertained by. Little do we know that we're setting up an addictive behavior where they can't be without them. They crave them. That's a whole other story, you know.
Well, we should mention one thing. I know we've got time, but there's one thing I want to mention what's coming, and I want people to be aware of. There is a new phase of gaming that's coming. It's already here. It's called esports. People are getting paid, kids are getting paid hundreds of thousands of dollars to compete on computer games. There are rock concerts and pop concerts. It's a massive industry. The new technology that's coming out, they're called virtual reality and augmented reality headsets. So they put these glasses, these goggles on your eyes. They're all wireless. They're going to be using a 60 gigahertz wireless communication route. That's horrific, right? Wi-Fi and Bluetooth and all the wireless communication runs around 2.4 gigahertz. That is mad enough. But to take it up to 60 and put that blue light right in front of our kids' eyes is just something you want to make sure your kids never do. And it's going to be hard to stop, because I've had a go at those things, and they are amazing. If I was a teenage kid, it's the first thing I want for Christmas. So it's going to be a very difficult thing to manage, but manage we need to do.
So what do you see, I mean, down the track? Do you see more eye problems, cataracts in younger children? Withdrawn.
Yeah, myopia is 90% of all Asians now. Like, every Asian, because they are addicted to their blue screen, and, you know, from Korea and China and all those Asian countries, they all have myopia. In Japan, they've lost all their sexual hormones, so there's no sex drive, so there's no kids being born. It's already done, and we are catching up in the West, and we're seeing it in our own eyes. So it's here. It's not coming.
Well, that's a whole other interview of what we need to do to protect ourselves and our children, and repair
well,
the damage and make sure we don't.
In the book, in the book I wrote, there's a lot of solutions of what people can do, because I know we've got to finish the interview, and I don't want people to go, "What am I going to do now?" I'm not trying to scare people. We can live with this. I recovered from 20 chronic diseases living in a suburb of Sydney which has cell towers everywhere. So you can live
so
with
give us, Jason, give us some of your top maybe five strategies that you think are essential for people that you use to heal your 20 different health challenges and what you recommend for people.
So number one is sunrise. We talked about that already. So that's grounded, feet on ground, no shoes in the sunrise. I want to manage my light, so I make sure I don't have many lights on during the night, and I wear blue blocking glasses. When it comes to nutrition, the number one thing that I added to my diet was DHA. DHA, which we won't go into why because we haven't got time, but it's an omega-3 fatty acid that is critical for cell membrane and all the signaling that goes on in your body. So DHA is best in seafood. Oysters is number one, and then the crustaceans and the fish number two and three. So that's why I ate a lot of oysters, and I ate 3 dozen oysters a week. Critical part of my healing. I know it sounds weird, but it's true. The third and most important part at night is developing a sleep sanctuary. We have these cell repair mechanisms that happen at night. It's called atopoiesis and autophagy. And we need to have complete darkness. So I have full blinds, so I can't see anything coming in through the window. I can't see my hand in front of my face. That's how dark I want to have my room. I have no electronics in the room. So your phones have got to be kept outside. They've got to be kept outside, well away. Don't want any distraction. There is no lights on. In my daughter's room, I actually turn the power off. So I even take the electricity out of her room because I want her to have the perfect sleep sanctuary, because she goes into a Wi-Fi school every day. So I've got to make sure her body can be repaired. So sleep sanctuary is really important.
Well, those are great strategies. You know, the exposure to Wi-Fi, like when you're charging your phone or have your phone on, or, you know, all these people are telling me how they look at their phones throughout the night. They wake up, they can't sleep because they're not making melatonin because they don't watch the sunrise, and then they're in a room that has too much light at night when it should be total darkness. So everything, all these circadian rhythms are screwed up, and they're watching their phones in the middle of the night. So that light signals to your pineal gland. The frequency is perceived as light by your pineal gland, so it thinks it's middle of the day. Sorry about that. So, you know, we need to get back to nature. We need to get back to these natural rhythms. We need to wake up and understand that there are strategies that we can do and must do that will support our health and our ability to heal. And that's why I so appreciate everything you're doing and your great work, because it is helping us to really regain the truth about who we are and how to really survive and thrive in the days and decades ahead. So I want to just thank you so much for all your time today and giving us such wise advice, Jason. And it's just been wonderful. Thank you so much. I so appreciate who you are.
You're welcome.
And what you're doing here.
Yeah, and if people want to know more, they can visit a new website we started called MitoHQ. It's Mitochondrial Headquarters, MitoHQ.com, where you can learn about all the stuff we're doing and how to improve mitochondrial function, because that's how we're going to survive. Keep our mitochondria strong and we build our resiliency, then we can cope with the environments which we are facing today. So that's our focus, and we hope to take it global. We'll see how we go. And you're a big part of it, Cheryl. I thank you for inviting me on and letting me speak to your audience. It's wonderful.
Well, we'll have to have you on again, Jason, because there's so much more that you have been researching and your vision and transforming the healthcare model, the whole paradigm, which is such a huge mission. I'd love to hear more about what that entails. So we'll definitely have you back. But it's been a pleasure. And please, everyone, visit Jason's website. In fact, get a copy of his book. How do people get your book, by the way?
Any normal way. It's on Amazon. It's on Barnes & Noble.
Okay.
It's a great book.
So it's In the Dark.
Yeah, and then
Jason Bawden, B-A-W-D-E-N.
Yeah, hyphen Smith. Yeah, do it both and it'll come straight up.
So it is a great book because you explain things in a really simple way that's easy to understand. So I appreciate that about your book. And again, Jason's website is mitohq, mitohq.com.
For those people who are interested in their mitochondrial function, we've got a little quiz that people can take and it'll give you a score. And it's only an estimate. It's not an assessment. It's just an estimate on how your mitochondria are functioning right now given the lifestyle choices you've made. So it's a good way to take a measure of how you're going. So I encourage people to do that.
Fantastic. Well, I hope everyone does that. Go up to a mitohq, mitohq.com. Jason, thank you again. You have a great day, and we'll be talking to you again soon. And I appreciate all the great work you're doing. Thank you. And to all of my listeners, thank you for joining me today. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. You've been listening to What Women Must Know with my guest, Jason Bawden Smith. And until next time, remember, always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.